Catholic Family Podcast presents Lent Around the World, daily traditional Catholic meditations read by our friends from across the globe.
The Passion and Death of Our Lord Jesus Christ by the Most Reverend Alban Goodyear. Part 24, Jesus Before Herod. Once more, the vehemence of the chief priests and elders overreached itself. The shifting Pilate, eager for any escape from the necessity of making a decision, seized on the mention of Galilee. He inquired further, how came Jesus to begin from Galilee? Did he belong to that province? Yes, he was Jesus of Nazareth. He had made Capernaum his own city. His followers were all Galileans. It was in Galilee that he had worked most of his miracles, that he had preached the Sermon on the Mountain, that he had promised eternal life to those who would eat his flesh and drink his blood, and had been rejected. It was in Galilee that he had claimed the power to forgive sins, and had made the Pharisees and Herodians come together to plot his death. It was in Galilee that he had done most of his good works. From Galilee that he had been compelled to fly. It was against the towns of Galilee, Chorazin and Bethsaida and Capernaum, that in the end he had been driven to pronounce words of doom, a greater doom than even that of Sodom and Gomorrah. Yes, indeed, in Galilee he had stirred up the people, so that in Nazareth itself they had sought his life. In Capernaum they had laughed him to scorn. He had been convicted of casting out devils by Beelzebub, the prince of devils. He had been the friend of publicans and sinners, the refuse of the land. It was in Galilee, and this was worst of all, that some had cried, "A great prophet hath risen up among us, and God hath visited his people." It was people from Galilee who had wished to make him their king. The charges were poured out for Pilate to hear, and in them he saw an unexpected escape. If all this could be said against the Galilean, then let him be judged by a Galilean judge. He knew that Herod, the tetrarch of Galilee, was in the city. Herod had come there, like the rest, to be present at the Pasch, as became a dutiful son of the builder of the temple. Pilate would send the Galilean to Herod. Though he was no friend, though at this moment they were bitter rivals, though in Jerusalem Herod had no jurisdiction whatsoever, but was only there as any other stranger, still, on this occasion, he might serve Pilate's purpose, and the rest could be overlooked. Pilate knew the character of Herod, the opposite of his own, and he contemned it. Capricious, impetuous, cruel, eaten up with self-indulgence that knew no bounds, dealing out death on the whim of a moment, loved none and loved by none, a stranger to love from his infancy. Such a man, surely, above all, with a hint from the Roman governor, might solve this morning's problem. If he did, then all would be well. Pilate would find excuse for all that followed. And Pilate, hearing of Galilee, asked if the man were a Galilean, and when he understood that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him away to Herod, who himself was at Jerusalem in those days. A messenger was quickly dispatched across the city to the palace of Herod. A Galilean had been brought before Pilate, called Jesus of Nazareth, or some such name. There was against him some charge or other of sedition. It appeared that the seat of the trouble was in Galilee. No doubt Herod knew better than Pilate what this accusation meant. No doubt he would know how to deal with it. Pilate was aware of Herod's strictness in matters of this kind. If, then, he would judge the man and condemn him, should he be found guilty, and see to it that he received the due punishment of treason, Pilate would owe Herod a debt of gratitude as a lover of justice and order. Herod was made to understand what line would most please the Roman governor. Herod was honored by the message. Never before had such deference been paid to him by a Roman, least of all by Pilate. Besides, it was true, he already knew much about the case. Since the day when John the Baptist had been imprisoned for a similar offense, it was known that Jesus had only followed in his footsteps. Indeed, he had gone further. The Baptists had once rebuked the Tetrarch for his unlawful marriage. Jesus had publicly defied him in the open road. "Go and tell that fox," he had once said, in presence of the people in Perea, when he had been given warning of Herod's machinations. "Go and tell that fox, behold, I cast out devils, and do cures today and tomorrow, and the third day I am consummated. Nevertheless, I must walk today and tomorrow and the day following, because it cannot be that a prophet perish out of Jerusalem." All this evidence, common talk among the spies of Herod, made a presumption that the charge of sedition against Jesus of Nazareth was true. In his own court at Machaerus, Herod would have asked for no further evidence. But there was for Herod another interest in the case of this Galilean. He had not only taught as the Baptists had taught, it was known all over Herod's tetrarchy that he was some kind of magician, and that he won men to follow him by his tricks. Herod had heard of him from many sources. At one time after the murder of the Baptist, when remorse and fear had almost driven him mad, he had lived in dread of this man's name and power. He had suspected he might be his murdered victim's venging spirit, come back to hunt him down. Since that time, during the year or more that had elapsed, seeing that nothing had happened, his fears had died away. Encouraged by his friends, his old craving for novelty had revived. He had long wished to see this man. He had hoped to see him work some magic trick. Now he would have a golden opportunity, for Jesus would be at his mercy. He would compel him to display some of his conjuring to save his life. And Herod, seeing Jesus, was very glad, for he was desirous for a long time to see him, because he had heard many things of him, and he hoped to see some miracle wrought by him. Herod called his court together, his eastern bodyguard, his courtesans, his sycophant attendants, a very different court from that of Pilate. One asks oneself whether Herodias and her daughter were there, with the blood of the Baptist still upon their hands. And there seems no reason to doubt it. But whatever misery was in their hearts, nay, the more because of their misery, Herod and his court loved a merry time. And today, they would have a spectacle altogether interesting, something quite novel, even to this satiated crew. Jesus was led down the steps from the balcony where he had stood to be tried by the Roman governor. He made no protest, not even against this gross and manifest injustice. He submitted to be taken wherever these men of blood chose to take him. Had he resisted, it is possible that even his accusers would this time have supported him, for the death of Jesus at the hands of Herod was not according to their plan. Still, the whim of Pilate must be obeyed. A guard was placed around the prisoner. Even in this gathering, the formalities of law and order must be obeyed. Men might howl at him as he passed. They might throw at him the refuse and garbage of those filthy eastern streets. But the law must do its ceremonious duty. For Jesus was now in Roman, not in Jewish hands, and the Roman guard would see to it that he reached the court of Herod in safety. There he was ushered into Herod's sumptuous hall, and this time, since Herod was, in name at least, a Jew, the elders and priests could enter with him without fear of contamination. The trial began with much merriment on the part of Herod and his courtiers. Jesus was a sorry sight in their eyes, fit only for jeering and laughter. Mean, sordid, and every way contemptible, they could afford to make sport of such a creature as this. No doubt, if he were tempted, if he were offered his release on condition of a display of his magic, he would easily yield. That a man should refuse under such conditions was unthinkable. Besides, Herod was not one to be thwarted, and all the world knew it. Jesus could not have forgotten the fate that had befallen his predecessor and friend. Herod therefore began with many questions. In the court of Annas, the questioning had been about his doctrine and his disciples. But Herod cared for neither of these. His questions were prompted by curiosity. He was eager to know this man's secret, if he had one. his secret fascination which made all poor men and women gather round him, his magic secret which he used so freely. Also, for his own sake, Herod would gladly know whether or not there was any connection between this strange man and the murdered John the Baptist. Though that ghost had long been laid, still the memory of it would revive. He had put to Jesus all manner of conundrums, and the giddy creatures round his throne assisted him. He questioned him with many words. But it was not long before the whole tone of the trial began to change. To all Herod's questions, to all the laughter of his courtiers, Jesus replied not one word. But he answered him nothing. He had spoken in the end both to Annas and Caiaphas. He had spoken at greater length to Pilate. But to Herod, he had not a word to say. He seemed almost to ignore the whole assembly. He seemed almost not to notice they were there. He had spared nothing to save even Judas. He would still do more to rescue Pontius Pilate. He would at the last moment befriend a dying criminal. But for Herod and his kind, this friend of publicans and sinners had nothing to say. Even his enemies, the scribes and Pharisees, the chief priests and elders, had received his appeals, his warnings, his denunciations. But Herod and his company received nothing, not even a threat such as had been given in Jewish courts the night before. To Jesus, Herod was as one dead. A dead body, a dead soul, his whole life eaten away by luxury, by concupiscence of the flesh, by that cancer which destroys not only men but whole nations. Against that evil, there was no appeal. To speak would have been a waste of words. Though Jesus longed for Herod no less than he longed for Pilate, yet could he do nothing more. He answered him nothing. Under such treatment, very soon the gaiety began to die down, the laughter became forced and artificial. Soon, both turned into annoyance and anger, for no one is more easily roused to anger than a man of Herod's type. In Herod's own court, this mountebank was defying them. He was insulting their tetrarch. He was behaving as if he, not Herod, were the master in that hall. He must be taught his place. If he would not do what Herod and his courtiers demanded of him, then he must be punished. They were not accustomed to be challenged by such a canal as this. The atmosphere was thickening and a storm threatened, and the chief priests and elders were quick to notice it. Herod was becoming grave. He might now be roused to do something fatal. Now at least was the moment to induce him to listen to their charges. He was becoming conscious of defeat. He had thought to make a fool of this criminal. He was perilously near being befooled. He would be ready to give ear to any accusation they might make. What those accusations were before such a judge could matter nothing. Before Pilate, they had need to be careful what they said. Before Herod and his crew, anything would serve. The evangelists have not troubled to record the charges that were made. And the chief priests and elders stood by, earnestly accusing him. They might have spared themselves their trouble. Herod, the fox, soon found a means to restore the balance, at least to save himself from discomfiture. Since Jesus of Nazareth would not play the fool to please his Lord would make him a fool. Since he presumed to make Herod himself appear foolish before Herod's own courtiers, Herod would prove him a fool before all the world. This unbending Jesus, this tongue-tied Jesus, this deaf-mute, this paralyzed mountebank had at last been exposed. He would not work a miracle, therefore he could not. If he could, under such conditions, with so much at stake, none but a fool would refuse. Let him work one and he would save his life. Let him work one, and he would put his enemies to confusion. Let him work only one, and Herod and his court would applaud, would protect him, would let him go free to preach as he would in Galilee. Who but a fool could refuse such an opportunity? But he answered him nothing. Evidently, therefore, he was a fool. a greater fool than even Herod had suspected. And like a fool, not like a criminal, he must be treated. For in spite of Pilate's flattery, Herod had no mind to be caught by his words. Herod was more astute than Pilate. He had not lived his crafty life for nothing. From the beginning, he had had no mind to pronounce sentence on Jesus. He knew the limits of his powers in Jerusalem. This turn in the game gave him the means to end it. The tetrarch and his courtiers renewed their old courage. The laughter was renewed, but there was bitterness in its hard note. The merriment revived, but it was restless and obviously terribly cruel. Worship of pleasure is seldom kind. Nothing more develops the mere brute, and we have long since learnt from another scene how brutal Herod and his gentry and ladies could be. The bodyguard caught the temper of their master. They were practiced in that art and knew how to behave in his presence. This Jesus, the fool, was beyond contempt. He was unfit even to be guarded. They could treat him only as he deserved, this stolid, stupid, silent piece of stone. But yes, they could do more. There occurred to a jester among them a happy thought. The garb of a lunatic was a white tunic. In such a dress, they would clothe him and send him back to Pilate. He would tell Pilate without words what the judgment of Herod had been. This fool was not worth the sentence of a court of law. A white sheet was found and was thrown round Jesus. All the court of ribald men and women shrieked their laughter at this wonderful display of cleverness. And Jesus, in the garment of a fool, was dragged back through the streets to the court of Pilate. And Herod with his soldiers despised him and mocked him, putting on him a white garment, and sent him back to Pilate. And Herod and Pilate were made friends together that same day, for before they were enemies one to another.